Stories are the way we construct the past. Patterns of memory we weave together to experience images once again and feel once more old emotions from a particular moment. Stories also link us in a moment of communal interaction in which we participate in the life of the storyteller, participate in the life of the other. They are a patchwork of recognizable patterns woven in a narrative that helps us make sense of our world, while at the same time giving us a base on which to build the future. They are a way in which we stand outside ourselves and reflect on who we are and what we want the future to be. And the key to that reflection is always the very human element we call imagination. For it is imagination that creates and not record. Welcome to Delmarva today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. We're talking about stories today, how to write them, how to share them. My guests are Nancy Sakadusky, the founder and owner of Cat and Mouse Press, and short story writer, Nancy Sherman. Nancy Sakadusky and Nancy Sherman, welcome to Delmarva today.
Thanks, Hal. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to see both of you again. Was it a year ago or a little bit more that the two of you were on the program?
Seems about right.
Yeah, I think you're getting to be an old hand, Nancy Sakadusky. Okay.
Experienced.
You're getting to be Nancy, a frequent visitor.
Thank you.
To Delmarva today. Nancy Sakadusky, tell us a bit about the Cat and Mouse Press. What kind of work do you publish? And I know you do other things than the Cat and Mouse Press as well.
Well, we focus on stories from the Delmarva region. So almost all of our books, whether they're for adults or children, are set along the shoreline here. So let's say from Cape May down to about Chincoteague, stories that are set in the individual beach towns, which all have a very different personality and feel, so that people reading the stories enjoy not just the story, but a sense of the place, and they get a feel for what that community is like. So most of our books, I would say, are short story collections for adults, but we've also published a few novels, we've published a few children's books, but all with that Delmarva connection. The only book we've published that does not have a regional emphasis is the book I wrote about how to write short stories, and that was based on my experience dealing with the authors. The other major endeavor we have is the short story contest.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about your book on writing winning short stories in a moment. But let me ask you, the work you publish focuses on the Delmarva region and particularly the beach area. Where do your authors come from? Are they regional or local as well?
I would say most are regional. We get some that are familiar with the area. They may vacation here but live somewhere else, or they have a part-time home here, something like that. I would say it's very difficult to write authentically about our little towns along the shore here unless you've spent some time there. So I would say most of them are local authors, and those that aren't have a good appreciation and understanding for the town they're writing about. And of course, this is all fiction. It's not nonfiction. So they have to have a sense of the place to write the stories.
Do they submit their books to you? Do you reach out to them? How did you find Nancy Sherman, for instance?
Well, that's a good story, because that's exactly how it often happens. I think it was the first year, right, Nancy Sherman?
It was.
the first contest year. The judging is completely blind, so the stories are submitted to the judges separately from any connection to any particular person. So as it turned out, they chose two of Nancy Sherman's stories, because of course they wouldn't know it was the same author, particularly since they were two completely different subject matter and styles. But the writing was so good, and she had such a good sense of place. And really, I could tell, had a knack for the local beach read, which was what I wanted my brand to be, as the local beach read. And so she knew about me. We met at the Writers Guild get-together, the Rehoboth Writers Guild. And she pitched the idea of a book with a collection of short stories set at the beach called Sandy Shorts. How could I resist that? And I knew her writing was good. I knew she was easy to work with. So it was sort of a no-brainer.
Well, we're going to hear from you, Nancy Sherman, also in a moment with one of your stories. But I would be remiss if I didn't ask both of you how you are faring during this pandemic, and particularly during the lockdown. Now, Nancy Sherman, as an author, writing is always a very lonely pursuit anyway. So being locked down just means that you're probably working harder than you worked before. But Nancy at Cat and Mouse Press, and particularly with the new Beach Reads contest that I think just ended at the beginning of this month, right? Yes. July 1, I think, was the end. What impact is the virus having on you and Cat and Mouse Press?
Well, the effect it's had on me personally, I have my 96-year-old father living with me now, which is quite a change, so he's sheltering here. In terms of our business is very seasonal, of course. Most of our books are sold in the summer, and most of our customers, the bookstores, the gift shops, the children's clothing and toy stores, have been hit hard. So our sales are definitely low this year compared with past years. We weren't able to have a book launch for our most recent book, Sandy Paws. That was a book I really, I thought was a great book. It's a lot of fun because it's pets at the beach, and I knew it would have a big reception. We had all sorts of events planned, and none of that was able to take place. With the contest, it didn't affect the contest itself. We got a good number of entries and some good quality stories, and the judges are all on board, and we've had no problems with the contest itself. But one of the highlights of getting in the book is the big book launch in the fall, and that will probably not take place. So the events is what's really suffered. Workshops that I do for writers, the book launches, that sort of thing.
Did you get any, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but did you get any stories that reflect the impact of the coronavirus?
You know, I don't know. I don't actually read the stories because I want the judges to make the decision, and I don't want my knowledge of any of the stories to come through in any way. So I don't read any of the stories. I let the judges read them. And once they've narrowed it down and we're talking about, you know, which one's going to be first place, second place, that kind of thing, then I read them. So I don't know the answer to that.
That will be very interesting to see, mm-hmm. quite frankly, what kind of impact the virus may have on the current short story writing.
Yes.
And Nancy Sherman, how are you dealing with the virus? And for whatever new work that you're working on, does the virus play any kind of a role in your new your new work that you're dealing with now?
Yes, it does. I did submit a story. Nancy does not know the title of it, but I did submit a story to the next collection. So writing was really something that I could do. However, because I'm home a lot now, I'm getting a lot of requests to copy edit. And so I'm spending too many hours on the computer and not getting myself away from it, because normally I would be running around all over the place. And now since we're sheltering at home and only going out for groceries, I'm just sitting here at the computer.
So. Well, it looks like you're making a very creative time of it. Yes. with your copy editing. Nancy Sakadusky, how to write winning short stories. Tell us a bit about your new book.
Well, the original book is How to Write Winning Short Stories, and this was meant to be a sort of a playbook for writers, from real beginners to people who are already writing short stories but want to improve their work and improve their success rate of getting published and winning contests. So that book got a very good reception, sells very well. People tell me that they have really made good use of it, and quite a few people have told me they think they got into the contest books as a result. They felt it really made the difference for them. The new book, which is coming out, this is a draft copy of it, is a workbook, and you can see the difference in the size. This is a workbook based on the original book, and this has exercises, checklists, grids. It's a real tutorial for people that want to take it up another notch. I don't know how visible it is on here, but it's lots of pencil and paper exercises where they can use their own writing or make up something new to try to learn the skills that are being taught.
Nancy, is it primarily a craft book? How to refine and develop the craft of writing?
Primarily, but I do address submission. I do address marketing a little bit, how to sell short stories, a little bit of the legal aspects of short stories, because I ran into that. Authors, for example, will quote song lyrics, not realizing that that's a copyright infringement. So I do a little bit of that. Talking about using real people in fiction. So a little bit of legality, a little bit of marketing, a little bit of the business side of things. But I would say the overwhelming part of the book is craft, the structure, what? Characters, setting, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, what aspect of craft do you deal with primarily?
Well, I start with the structure of the story and talk about the conflict and the need to have a substantive story and an arc. I talk about characters, setting, dialogue, how to avoid the backstory, getting across the setting and the characters through action and dialogue rather than just description. So I've taken, again, a lot of the common errors I make, even things like choosing the title. I get stories submitted to the contest, and the theme this year is beach mysteries. So somebody might submit a story, a beach mystery. Well, that's someone who didn't even take a moment to think about what the title should be. Yeah. So I talk about ways to select a title that really helps showcase a story. So that sort of thing.
Well, you've mentioned a couple of times now setting. And I get the feeling that setting is very, very important to you. Of course, you focus on setting with the beach, yes. With the beach area. So relative to setting, you chose a piece that you wanted to read to us that illustrates a good use of setting, or at least a treatment of setting that pleases you. So would you mind reading that for us and then saying a few words about it?
Okay, so this was a very short piece that was in our book, Sandy Paws, that I mentioned earlier. So the idea with this book, which was not a contest, it was curated, but the idea here was to have short stories, and there are even a few poems that have a cat or a dog or both in a beach setting, set in one of our local cities or towns. So this is a piece, very short, called Running with Joey by Sherry Wright. When Joey sees me putting on my running shoes, he wags his wispy black tail, stares with earnest brown eyes, and waits. For 3 months, he chewed up shoes and chairs, tore through the house, and flopped his sloppy chew toys into my lap every time I sat down to read the newspaper. To use up his energy, I started taking him running. My arthritic hands mold and fold onto his leash, and I hang on and try to steer at a pace faster than any race I've run. At the bridge, I yell, "Stop!" and plant my feet. I catch my breath. Through years of running, I've lingered on this bridge to search for red-eared turtles, giant carp, and occasionally the enormous snapper with beady eyes and a pink snout. I've watched mallard babies grow from fluff balls into iridescent feathered creatures. Herons and bald eagles perch in the crowns of these trees. Joey lurches left, yanking me off the bridge after a squirrel. So fast, so strong. What kind of dog is this skinny puppy we adopted from the shelter last June? And why did his first mother abandon her beautiful black baby with his white crossed chest and one white paw? With both hands, I force him back to the path to lure him the last quarter mile to the ocean. Joey tugs me onto the beach until the fragrance of a fish or a sand crab turns him in a circle. He digs, he tunnels. He spews wet sand into my face, my shirt, my legs, my old blue shoes. I wonder how I will ever teach Joey to slow down, to watch turtles under the bridge and birds in the trees, to taste the salty air, to listen to the pulse of the surf, and to behold a red-orange sun as it rises out of the sea. To run my run, to be my child, to lead me and these old blue running shoes back home.
What is it, Nancy, about the setting in this story that attracted you, that captured you in a sense?
For such a short piece, she really gives you a lot of sensory clues that people that are familiar with this area would recognize. The idea of standing on a bridge and looking over and seeing turtles and fish is an experience many of us have enjoyed here. Certainly sunsets. And of course, many people have dogs that they run with. So there's that aspect too. But the imagery of the dog digging on the beach, looking for sand crabs, spewing the wet sand. There's just so much sensory detail, the pulse of the surf, the salty air, the taste, the smells, the visual elements. She just really does a great job of capturing some of the wilder side, the more natural side of this area, as opposed to we get other stories. Also good, not a comparison, just to give a distinction. Some of the stories focused on the boardwalk and the French fries and the, you know, the fun of the lively nights and that kind of thing of the beach life. This focus more on the environmental side, the nature side. And I thought it was a very interesting piece and still worked in the idea of a dog and the companionship with a dog.
Well, I thought that there was a lovely shift toward the end, which mm-hmm. gave the story more depth.
Definitely.
Than just a walk yes. with the dog and the sense of the owner's ability to yes. Feel and to reflect and contemplate the setting, whereas the dog reacts to the setting. So I thought that shift yeah. was a significant shift. Nancy Sherman.
Yes.
Your first collection of short stories, Sandy Shorts, was awarded a regional first place by the Delaware Press Association and a national first place by the National Federation of Press Women in 2015 when it came out. And now your more recent book, More Sandy Shorts. By the way, I agree. What a what a magnificent title. The second collection won those same two awards again in 2019 when it came out. And your short stories have also been published in several anthologies. You're going to read a short story that you've edited for us, The Cost of Happiness. And I would appreciate it if you would read that for us.
Okay. When my sister Vivian invited me to spend spring break with her in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, as her treat, I should have known she was buttering me up for something. On our first day there, while sipping tea and munching scones delivered to our balcony at the hotel, Vivian gestured toward the ocean with a wide sweep as though she were one of those models on The Price is Right. "Just look at that view, Gabby. Wouldn't you love to be able to see that the entire summer?" "Of course, but we can't afford a summer rental." "Who said rental? I'm talking about owning a beach house." "Viv, have you lost your mind? Our teaching salaries aren't enough to support homes in Baltimore and Rehoboth Beach." Vivian gave me the teacher look, as though that would work on another teacher. "Just think of spending our summer breaks here. We can pool the inheritance we got from Grandmom, but we really should act now so we'll have the mortgage paid down before we retire, and then you and I can enjoy our senior years near the beach." She handed me the last scone, so I knew something big was about to be added to the discussion. "Wendy, our real estate agent, will show us houses today." This was the kind of setup Vivian was famous for. At 11 a.m., a petite blonde 20-something arrived at the hotel. She bubbled over with cheerleader energy. "Good morning, ladies." She held out a shiny folder. "Here are the houses we'll tour today." Vivian opened the folder. "Beautiful. Which one will we pick to be Two Sisters Beach House?" The agent smiled. "Naming a beach house is an old custom, but it's trending again." Wendy drove them to Fenwick Island, to an ocean view beach house built atop thick wood pilings. It was spectacular. The furnishings and the amenities were worthy of a movie star. Certainly the house was beautiful, but I was fairly sure there was no way my sister and I could afford it, not even with our inheritance from Grandmom. "So what's something like this cost?" Wendy winked. "It's priced to move at $2.5 million. It's an absolute steal considering the view, the imported Italian marble, built-in technology, full house surround sound, and keep in mind that jacuzzi on the rooftop deck." "Do you have a listing that's anything less?" Vivian asked her. Wendy's lips tightened, but she forced a smile. "Not if you want an oceanfront home. Anything this close to the beach will be at least $1 million, even for a fixer-upper. I wish you'd been upfront about your budget. Text me a realistic price point, and I will assure you I can find you a perfect summer home." Back at the hotel, Vivian addressed the issue. "As far as I'm concerned, Gabby, we can stop the search. You were right. We can't afford a beach house." "Sure we can." I couldn't believe I was saying this, but I could see my sister's eyes tearing up. "We just can't afford one of those. So we have to change our idea of a beach house. You know that Laurie, the sophomore counselor at school, has a place nearby, right? She told me she'll be there this week. Why don't we go visit her?" "I heard she has a trailer, not a house." "I never said she had a house. I said she had a place. By the way, it's called a mobile home, not a trailer." "Maybe later in the week. I need a day to recover." The next morning, Vivian declined to visit Laurie, but insisted that Gabby take the car and go alone. Laurie's mobile home was part of a community called Aspen Meadows on a quiet back street. When I pulled into the community, I was surprised how different it was from what I had imagined. Surrounded by lush trees and shrubs, the mobile home seemed more like cottages. There were porches, gardens, and landscape lawns. Laurie was standing on a redwood deck, waving me onto the parking pad in front of her home. She pointed to a hand-painted sign hanging on the railing of the deck. "Board of Education, get it? That's why we call our mobile Board of Education." She handed me a glass of wine. "Where's Vivian?" "Nursing a migraine back at the hotel." I clicked wine glasses with Laurie, but she told me to take pictures. I opened my cell phone and clicked a photograph of the French doors as I followed Laurie inside. "This is a mobile? I can't believe it." Laurie nodded. "Yeah, if I say that my beach house is a mobile, everyone at school thinks I have a camper on a plot of dirt." Following my sister's request, I took photos of each room. the open space concept living area and spacious bedrooms with ensuite bathrooms. This was more space than I had in my townhouse in Baltimore. I want one of these, I said. If you mean it, there's a great double wide like this for sale just down the street, even better than ours. The two guys who own it totally redid the inside. Maison du Martini. It's like something out of Architectural Digest. A wicked grin crossed Larry's face. I'm telling you, Gabby, you need to see this place. It's such a good deal considering the work the guys put into it. You owe it to yourself to check it out before it gets snapped up. Everything Lori said about it was true. A wraparound deck, an enclosed garden area with a fire pit, and a storage shed that had been redesigned into a screened seating area. The interior looked like a spread in a magazine, a cross between Manhattan Cool and Summer Casual. I fell in love immediately and asked Judith, the real estate agent, how much are the owners asking? The list price is $130,000, but there's already an offer for $139,000. After the price tag on the Fenwick Beach House, this price seemed a bargain. Would you like to make an offer? Judith asked. I should have said no. I should have considered my sister's dream of a house with a water view. I should have at least called Vivian before I took out my credit card, but I didn't. I'll offer $139,500. Lori couldn't hide her enthusiasm. For gosh sakes, take photographs. While the agent set up paperwork, I clicked away. Though I wondered how I was going to break the news to my sister. What did I just do? You just bid on a beach house, Lori said. This is exciting. Let's go to the hotel and tell your sister and show her the photographs. No. Why not? Viv wants a beach house, literally on a beach. But her search was a disaster. Oh, I see what you mean. Buying a beach house was Vivian's idea, but you beat her to it. Yeah, she'll be pissed, won't she? When Gabby and Lori drove to the hotel to have lunch with Vivian, the beans were almost spilled. During dessert, Vivian grabbed my phone. Gabby, you haven't shown me photos of Lori's mobile. Before I could retrieve it, she opened the photo app. Maison du Martini, what's this? It's a mobile that belongs to two of Lori's friends. I held out my hand for the phone, but Vivian kept flipping through the photographs. She expanded one of them, but I couldn't see which one. Then she clicked around, and I got the feeling she sent a copy to someone, probably herself, though I don't know why she would do that. Vivian declined outlet shopping, so Gabby and Lori went without her. Throughout their shopping, Gabby was consistently dinged as the agent umpired a bidding war for the mobile. On the way back to Lori's, they saw Vivian's car parked in the Maison du Martini driveway. They quickly drove past to Lori's place, just in time for another call from the agent. It's down to you and one other bidder who just offered $140,000. Do you want to counter? No, I withdraw my bid. Lori's jaw dropped. What did you just do? You were so close to getting. I smiled. I think I found a way to have my mobile and still keep my sister happy. But it's going to take a solemn promise from you that you'll never tell Vivian I bid. Lori broke out into a loud laugh. Vivian's the other bidder? Most likely, I think my sister was impressed by the photos and devised her own plan to check out the place. Moments later, Vivian drove up. Surprise! I've come to visit! How'd you find Lori's house? Ignoring my question, Vivian reached into her purse and took out a folded packet of paper. Gabby, I've got exciting news for you. That mobile you took pictures of yesterday, I visited it today. And I bought it! We have a beach house! Isn't that great? I pretended to be shocked, but I didn't need to pretend my excitement. That's wonderful. She handed the paper and pen to me. You just sign on the line and we're co-owners of a classy double wide in Aspen Meadows. As I wrote my name, I said, and this one we really can call Two Sisters Beach House. And that's it.
Nancy Sherman, beautifully read. Unfortunately, we are totally out of time. And I want to thank both of you for coming on again. It's always a delight to have you.
My pleasure.
To have you on Delmarva today. Thank you. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today on Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.